When he ran for the presidency, George W. Bush could have had no idea that he would become a wartime president, and Americans had no idea that he and his closest advisors would be confronted with perhaps the most fundamental question any administration has faced since the end of World War II: how to exercise American power in a turbulent, unpredictable, and very dangerous world. NPR's Mike Schuster reports on how the attacks of September 11th changed George W. Bush's outlook on the world.
George W. Bush and his advisors had distinct notions about foreign policy when they took command of the reins of government on January 20th, 2001. They were inclined to be distrustful of international institutions. They believed those institutions encroached on American sovereignty and American freedom of action in the world. They believed that international treaties imposed too many restrictions on the United States. They also believed that nearly everything Bill Clinton had done in world affairs was suspect and harmful to American interests. For these reasons, the Bush administration was quickly labeled unilateralist, a description that has stuck, says Gideon Rose, managing editor of the journal Foreign Affairs.
Every American administration is going to act unilaterally on some issues and multilaterally on others. What one can expect and demand is that there is some good reason for deciding which issues will get which treatment.
What's the distinction? It's a simple one, says Joseph Nye, the dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard and a former assistant secretary of defense in the Clinton administration. Using Nye's definition, it would be fair to say that many of the president's foreign policy advisors are inclined to pursue a more unilateralist foreign policy for the United States.
The unilateralists tend toward thinking that our enormous military strength means we can do as we wish. The multilateralists tend to say, well, but there's some things that you can't solve by your enormous military strength in which you need cooperation from others to get them done.
George W. Bush displayed little interest in foreign policy before he ran for president, and as a candidate, it was not entirely clear which camp he fit in. He expressed skepticism about U.S. participation in international peacekeeping missions in Bosnia and elsewhere. But in one of the presidential debates, when he was asked how other nations should view the United States, he answered this way.
Our nation stands alone right now in the world in terms of power, and that's why we've got to be humble and yet project strength in a way that promotes freedom. So I don't think they'll look at us in any way other than what we are. We're a freedom-loving nation, and if we're an arrogant nation, they'll view us that way, but if we're a humble nation, they'll respect us.
September 11th certainly changed that. For a man who knew little about the murky world of Osama bin Laden, the president declared a global war on a largely invisible enemy. For a man who for most of his life paid scant attention to the world outside the U.S., George W. Bush was faced with decisions that had enormous international scope. By early this year, he had coined the Axis of Evil phrase, and the Pentagon was planning for an invasion of Iraq. Last June, in a speech to West Point graduates, the president proclaimed principles for the exercise of American power that were anything but humble. Deterrence and containment, the fundamental policies of the long Cold War, would not suffice to keep America safe, the president declared. It was now time to use military power to preempt enemy attacks.
In the world we have entered, the only path to safety is the path of action, and this nation will act.
Before September 11th, there were many issues on which the Bush administration struck its own path, the Kyoto Treaty on Global Warming and the International Criminal Court being the most notable. On the great global threats that have confronted the United States since September 11th, terrorism and the spread of weapons of mass destruction, the Bush administration has also chosen the path with few, if any, encumbrances. So much so that allies and friends are alarmed with American policies, says Clyde Prestowitz, a senior Commerce Department official in the Reagan administration.
Many of our allies and partners conceptualize a war on terror as a multilateral effort, one that will require the cooperation of many countries and many different agencies. Their concern is that the U.S. is tending to go it alone or to operate on the basis of coalitions of the moment rather than on the basis of established alliances and global institutions and procedures.
On September 12th, the 18 military allies of the United States in NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, for the first time in history, invoked Article 5 of the alliance's charter, calling the attack on the U.S. an attack on all. Last October, B-52s crowded the skies over Afghanistan. The United States went to war, not shoulder to shoulder with its NATO allies, but nearly alone. Later, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld would explain this decision in a speech at the National Defense University in Washington.
Wars can benefit from coalitions of the willing, to be sure, but they should not be fought by committee. The mission must determine the coalition. The coalition must not determine the mission. If it does, the mission will be dumbed down to the lowest common denominator, and we can't afford that.
The Bush administration did engage with the world in the struggle against terrorism, sharing intelligence, working with foreign police forces, and with foreign banks to freeze terrorist assets. But the war in Afghanistan has been fought by American troops with a bit of help from British soldiers. The Bush administration has refused so far to commit U.S. troops to an international security force, and it has refused to authorize through the UN the deployment of that force beyond the capital city, Kabul. Unfortunate decisions, says Lee Hamilton, director of the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars and former chairman of the International Relations Committee of the House of Representatives.
We're making a major mistake there. We should support the expansion of the international peacekeeping force. We should contribute resources to it, logistics, intelligence. I don't think we need to contribute American forces to it. That can come from other areas. But if we don't establish security in Afghanistan, then the hope of development and developing a new government and carrying out an effective aid program has no chance.
As millions of refugees return to Afghanistan and life reverts to normal, there is a fear that this policy could result in the same chaos that made Afghanistan a sanctuary for international terrorists in the mid-90s. The administration does not speak with one voice on these issues. There are deep divisions within it, with Secretary of State Colin Powell often fighting a lonely battle to maintain American commitment to multilateral solutions. But Joe Biden, the Democrat from Delaware, who is chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, says the tougher stance of Vice President Cheney, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, and others sets the tone for policy decisions.
The people who are part of the think tanks who are on the right, they have an incredible aversion to the notion of, quote, nation building. That's the dreaded word. It's the only thing that dreaded more is Clinton did it. These are the same guys who remember wanting to pull troops out of the Sinai, for Lord's sake. These are people who wanted to get out of Bosnia, out of Kosovo, out of Europe. These are the people who question whether or not NATO still has relevancy. These are the people who also say, in effect, if Bin Laden and the boys come back to Afghanistan, we can go do the same thing again.
September 11th sharpened the Bush administration's preference for war making over peacemaking, with potentially more serious consequences in the next phase of the war against terrorism, Iraq. President Bush has made the replacement of Saddam Hussein the policy of his administration. Now the debate is underway, the why, when, and how of a war in Iraq, with many in the president's party doubting his policy. Foremost among them is Brent Scowcroft, the elder George Bush's national security advisor, who first challenged the goal of making war against Saddam Hussein at a Council on Foreign Relations symposium last spring.
Terrorism is not the reason that we need to worry about Iraq. Saddam Hussein wants nuclear weapons in order to be able to blackmail the United States in the event we want to send forces here or there or elsewhere and he doesn't like it. Now, if he develops nuclear weapons, why on earth is he getting turn those over to terrorists who have very different goals than he does and say, you guys do what you want with them. It seems to me he's going to want to use them himself.
President Clinton's national security advisor, Sandy Berger, argued against going it alone if the U.S., with all its power, fails to win over allies.
While we may be able to do this by ourselves in some technical, literal military sense, I think it's important that whatever we do have legitimacy in the eyes of the world. We acted largely unilaterally in Afghanistan, but it was seen by the world as legitimate because it was seen as an appropriate response to the provocation. One of the problems I have with the axis of evil phrase is that it focuses the attention on us, not on the threat. We're not talking about Saddam Hussein, we're talking about American unilateralism.
And given the way events in Afghanistan have unfolded, there are additional reasons to be concerned about the consequences of a war with Iraq, says Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, senior Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee.
The next question will be, what after that? What kind of a government there? How long are we prepared to be peacekeepers in Iraq, quite apart from peacekeeping in Afghanistan, which already we're reluctant to do?
There's a larger idea lurking beneath all of this. Many foreign policy experts believe, deeper than the unilateralism versus multilateralism argument. That is, how the United States should now exercise its power in the world. Zbigniew Brzezinski, National Security Advisor to President Carter, questions whether seeing everything through the prism of the war on terrorism, as President Bush does, is too limited for understanding complex world events.
We won the Cold War, and the question now is, what is the purpose, what is the vision of our leadership in the world? And I think we have to define that much more broadly than the war on terrorism. We have to view the war on terrorism as part of a larger struggle to deal with the underlying sources of turbulence and violence and conflict in the world, of which terrorism is an important, dangerous manifestation.
The most violent and turbulent conflict right now is in the Middle East, the war between Israel and the Palestinians. As Israeli tanks and helicopter gunships attacked Palestinian cities in April, President Bush and his advisors were unable to steer a diplomatic course that might have helped bring about a halt to the violence. The successful American war on terrorism in Afghanistan colored the president's view and that of his advisors of Israel's fight against Palestinian violence, with unfortunate consequences, says Edward Walker, a former U.S. ambassador to Israel and Egypt.
They identified with the problem that the Israelis were having, and there was a tendency then to not only identify but sympathize with that problem. I think the mistake they made, and the mistake that Sharon has made, is in believing that a military solution is possible to the problem.
Initially, the Bush team did not believe that the growing violence in the Middle East presented any urgent need for aggressive American diplomacy. When the administration set its sights on Iraq, Vice President Cheney traveled to the Middle East, but he failed to enlist Arab help to oust Saddam Hussein because Arab leaders were so consumed with the violence of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Only then did the administration realize its earlier approach was wrong. They should have known better, says Lee Hamilton.
So the Middle East is constantly bubbling and seething and getting in the way of the president's other foreign policy objectives, and I think it'll continue to do so. No American president can hide from the Middle East.
The administration, in its propensity for military action insufficiently supported by diplomatic groundwork, had found itself even more isolated in the Middle East than it preferred.